In this episode of Justice in Motion, I speak with Somia, our other film fellow, about coming of age and identity representation in TV shows and movies, as well as intergenerational representation. Hope you enjoy. Hello, hello. My name is Eva Briner. I am one of the film fellows for the Social Justice Film Institute.
And my name is Samia Cannon. I am one of the other fellows. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to be taking over the pod from Daniel this week. And we're going to be taking a closer look at coming of age narratives this week, looking at TV shows and series that we've seen.
So we'll be talking about shows like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I May Destroy You, Never Have I Ever, and a few others, just looking at how representation in TV works for coming-of-age narratives and the lasting impact of a strong and true narrative.
Yes, so let's get right into it. So we're going to start by kind of looking at two very different depictions of young adult coming-of-age stories we watched. We watched two episodes from both Emily in Paris, the Netflix original that was nominated for a Golden Globe, and I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole's most recent show.
So just for a quick rundown on what both shows are about, Emily in Paris follows a Chicago marketing executive who travels to Paris to provide an American perspective at another marketing firm. You kind of look at culture shock, her experience in Paris without knowing the language, and just how she navigates that. I May Destroy You follows the story of Arabella, who is an author in the show, and experiences being sexually assaulted at a nightclub. She then is kind of forced to reassess everything while being in the public eye, and deals with the aftermath of her assault.
Yeah, so we kind of wanted to look at these two different shows because they were both kind of on the stage for the Golden Globes, and Emily in Paris was actually nominated for two Golden Globes, while I May Destroy You kind of received a snub. So we're going to look at Emily in Paris first as kind of like a what not to do. The show doesn't really introduce us to our characters in a way that connects us to them or helps us really understand them. And Emily is really just, to the audience, some girl fumbling her way through a job. She's perfectly preened, even when receiving like a 3 a.m. cyber sex FaceTime call from her overseas boyfriend, a moment that is like incredibly awkward in the show and doesn't really bring anything real to the show. It kind of just shows us that there's enough sex in the show to let viewers know that it's going to be a theme, but not enough to show us anything real about sex for women or what sex is actually meaningful or like what it's like in a long distance relationship. There is a stunning lack of diversity throughout the show, and it really brings us a version of Paris that is devoid of color. The BIPOC characters of the show are never more than two-dimensional and truly exist to help Emily when she fumbles or missteps.
So, I May Destroy You, again, centers writer Arabella, who is played by Michaela Cole, a young millennial author in London. After being assaulted on a night out, Arabella is left to deal with the aftermath of her sexual assault while in the public eye. One thing that I truly loved about the show was how personal and deep the characters feel. They're so lived in that even when you don't know their names or much about them, you just get a feeling for who they might be. They're not perfect by any means. The spaces that they live in aren't perfectly spotless or clean. Arabella smokes weed on a toilet no more than like 5 minutes into the first episode. It really gives room for the spaces to be messy, the characters to be messy as they figure out their lives, navigating what adulthood is like. And that feels like a true coming of age narrative to me. And it just feels like a truer and more tangible depiction of life, something more relatable, and something that exists in very stark contrast to the characters of Emily in Paris, whose lives are defined by their work or their nationality or kind of stereotypes about their existence.
Having this kind of contrast between Emily in Paris being like this very whitewashed version of reality, and I May Destroy You being like literally full of color in all sense of the word. Like the way that the show is edited includes so much like vibrant color, like in the nightclub, even in the space that she works, like there's bright blues and dark pinks. Like it's just a gorgeous show to watch. But I think this stark contrast really just shows us, like in narrative as well, like shows us the importance of having like Black writers and filmmakers being in control of their own narratives. It becomes especially clear like when media is diverse in front and behind of the character. Like with I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole is playing this character Arabella and is also in control of the script in the show and is involved in all sections. We just get stronger stories. We get truer stories out of our media, and we kind of just get a deeper understanding of the richness of our lives. So kind of speaking about diversity in front of and behind the camera, I think we should dive into the show Never Have I Ever.
Yes, for sure. So Never Have I Ever has been one of my favorite shows. I believe it's written and directed by Mindy Kaling and is kind of one of the first steps into South Asian representation, especially for young adults on kind of a commercial and such a broad scale and platform. It gives life to a story that's buried in media and in like several communities, just processing representation, or it's a representation of processing trauma and something that I have a kind of complicated relationship with, to be honest. So recently the second season of Never Have I Ever came out, and I have a confession. I haven't watched the second season yet. I was super excited, loved the first. And part of the reason that I haven't watched the second season yet is just because of the weight that I feel like identity-based coming-of-age narratives can sometimes hold. One of the things that I've discussed with several other South Asian friends when talking about Never Have I Ever is the fact that while we see some aspects of ourselves represented in the main character and her experiences growing up, it's also scary to know that that experience is kind of out in the world because of the ways it can sometimes be just absorbed as a monolith and the ways that it kind of exposes the very depth of just existing with a South Asian identity to the very public eye and just thinking about how that might be received. There's just like different tensions with kind of the way that identity is represented through several microaggressions, right, and the way that representation is shaped just very heavily by that. And so something I've been wanting to think about with Never Have I Ever and coming-of-age narratives in general is how we represent identity, whether that's something that comes through the difficult experiences, the traumas, the sense of othering, or where it's possible to find joy in that, where it's possible to represent joy in BIPOC identities and in the way those exist uniquely. And yeah, that just makes me think of what we demand in terms of representation too.
Completely. Yeah, I think that's such an interesting point, and it's an important one, especially for coming of age narratives that people often turn to see elements of themselves reflected in more than other forms of media. Coming of age stories are so easy to kind of project your own story onto, and for so long like these stories have been like incredibly white and incredibly straight and upper middle class. Like there hasn't been a lot of coming of age narratives that kind of like seem to reflect multiple identities. And I think that Never Have I Ever, while it does do a great job at kind of like bringing that representation into a coming of age sphere, I agree. Like, what do we demand in terms of representation? How do we push shows that are doing a good job to do better? And how do we also kind of like protect shows from becoming a monolith and from becoming like the only one out there to be doing something that really every show has no excuse to kind of like bring better forms of character representation and just like deeper characters to the screen that not only white upper middle class people can relate to, but anyone who watches the show can see bits of themselves in, especially people who haven't been represented on screen.
Yes, for sure. And to kind of dive deeper into that idea of the monolith that like is ultimately presented to, I know that several South Asian authors have and journalists have commented on this after watching parts of Never Have I Ever, but we do know that the first season contained elements of ableism, coming-of-age narratives with queerness that were super important, but also, you know, depict only a certain version of queerness, which isn't necessarily inherently bad, but just the fact that it can be dangerous to take the one narrative that we're seeing, despite the different levels of intersectional identities that it may represent, and it can be dangerous to kind of hail that as the one monolith or the step into representation, because shows may have their faults that end up further, you know, erasing people within, like, the intersections of marginalized communities. For example, people who are South Asian and disabled have commented on feeling seen in one part of their identity, but kind of how it can be a bigger blow with just the absolute lack of recognition of ableism or instances of Islamophobia in the show. And so, again, asking what we demand in terms of representation, what we demand in terms of kind of the audience knowing that there isn't a monolith and that we are allowed to listen to these narratives and kind of cherish them and hold them, but also know that we can demand more, I think is really important.
Completely, especially with shows that are coming of age narratives, like anything that is kind of like set for a younger audience or for an audience that is maybe like finding their path or looking back on their path while watching a coming of age narrative. I think it's important to remember that even if a show is doing something well, we can't rely on it as the only one to do everything right. Like, we need to push our media spheres to constantly be doing more and be doing better, because otherwise, how do we know what is good? How do we know what we need? We need to be pushing the media to kind of like show more accurate and real depictions of life, because from those accurate, real depictions, we can kind of shape our own spheres of life and kind of reflect that back upon ourselves. So I think it's super powerful to find shows like this that are doing like a good job and like having like an accurate to some extent representation of what it is to come of age as like a person of color, as someone who's queer, like exploring your gender identity and like your sexuality. But you're so right in that these shows can't be hailed for doing it right once. We need to have a lot of shows doing it right multiple times in order for anyone to feel satisfied or like they can actually see themselves in the media that what they consume. Something that I did love about this show is kind of the room that they give their characters to be messy. I know we've talked about this with I May Destroy You, but it is such a theme in the show as well. Specifically in the first season, there's the 7th episode where there's kind of just like a messy friend situation, like big questions arising for the main character. And I just love seeing young people in situations that are not cut and dry. I think a lot of coming of age narratives kind of give us like a either or situation rather than like a multi-layered kind of deeply confusing situation that becomes formative. It's rather like, are you going to date the jock or date the cheerleader? Like, which one is it going to be? Like, in this, it's more like, are you going to step up for your friends and help them in ways that are deep and meaningful? Or are you going to choose yourself and alienate your friends? Like, these questions that are deeply formative. And I love this space for there to be mess and still forgiveness. I love there to be the space for people to make mistakes and like actually get an apology or like give an apology. I love seeing that in a coming of age narrative that feels true to form and like feels realistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that was really beautiful and comforting to me about both Never Have I Ever and I May Destroy You, especially when we're comparing that to Emily in Paris. I know that I think because of the lack of representation for women of color, there's representation of the issues that people face, the microaggressions that people face, and the forces that they face externally. And then I think there's representation of people growing through that, people being able to name things and call them out, to find support from their friends and their family and their communities in order to address those things and be like, hey, this is wrong. This is something systemic that exists that makes it harder. But like, just seeing them get to navigate that, I think, is truly a privilege and is so beautiful. And that's one of the things that I really missed with Emily in Paris. I know that there were a few characters of color, but they were never truly fully fleshed out. And while there was kind of diversity for numbers, there wasn't truly diversity and depth in narratives. We never really got to see what the lives of these characters looked like. We got to see what, you know, it was like for a white woman to go to Paris, to exist without knowing the language, to, you know, walk around with a lot of different privileges and to still experience culture shock and a form of othering. But we never get to hear about what it's like to grow up in that environment for other people who are deeply othered on, you know, the basis of identity in something like far deeper and in just a different way than nationality. And so I truly, yeah, do appreciate the way that Never Have I Ever and I May Destroy You offer just a way to navigate how messy life is, how messy coming of age is, in a way that we, I don't think, get to see often enough, as often as we deserve on screen.
It's so true, especially from characters that are so often marginalized, like seeing a realistic depiction of like what it looks like to make a mistake and what it looks like to just not always like be a perfect person, or even be the person that you want to be or that you think you are. Like, having these mistakes that you make are what create like a deeper connection to yourself and to your community. Like, mistakes make us stronger, and I think when we have a show like Emily in Paris that gives us like a show devoid of mistake, and the only mistakes are like culture shock missteps, which is so incredibly surface level. I think like seeing shows like Never Have I Ever and I May Destroy You really is so refreshing, like you were saying, and it really does kind of like prove to us that like true representations of life like happen when things are kind of messy, and truth like on screen tends to have a lasting impact. Like, people remember things that feel true to them. And one show that really kind of comes to mind with this is The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which is definitely one of the more culturally relevant shows even today. It's a sitcom, a coming of age series, and specifically, I think an episode that comes to mind with like truth and representation and messiness is the episode Mistaken Identity. It's a pretty famous one, but I think in terms of sitcom, it's one of the more allowing episodes. It kind of doesn't stay true to form with like the laugh track and everything. Like, it allows its characters to have more emotional and deep moments. And for those of y'all who maybe are not familiar, the Mistaken Identity episode is when Will and Carlton are arrested after driving a borrowed car to Palm Springs. And the episode talks a lot about policing and race, and it really paints a clear picture of the dangers that cops pose to Black men. Specifically in this episode, they're talking about Black men. So in this episode, Will and Carlton like are arrested for driving a borrowed car that the cops think is stolen. And it's really only when their parents and their family friend, who is white, step in that Will and Carlton are released from the prison or the jail, local jail. And the episode ends in like a notably super powerful way, with Carlton really denying what happened and like saying it wasn't because of their race. And then Phil tells him that it really was. And when he was their age, he had a similar situation happen, showing the audience that like these issues are really longstanding, and the experience of unjust and unlawful arrest based on race is like a historic thread. And this episode like really brings a lot of truth and perspective to a reality that is still present today. And it shows us kind of just like the really impactful messaging of truthful storytelling, and like that when we get a narrative that is like true and feels real and tangible and kind of hits home for a lot of viewers, like that impact is going to last, and that impact is going to form meaning, like form a meaning with the viewers and kind of give people like a window into the characters that they see, and also like a deep, like a different way to explore themes within their own lives.
Yeah. And I think going back to the idea of navigating the messiness of understanding that situation was something that I think just gave this show so much depth and kind of, yeah, just made it more profound. I think one of the things that really stuck with me was at the end of this episode when Carlton is kind of denying that this could be about race and, you know, almost to the point of thinking that the cops like were reasonable, and Will is incredibly frustrated and says, "You just don't get it." And kind of just that moment of seeing Carlton's disbelief, his moment of awakening to the privilege that he holds in his class, maybe, but definitely not in race. And, you know, awakening to Will's experience and growing up in a very different area feels just, I think the nuance that it brings to discussions of race and class and the way that that's experienced and the way that both boys navigate that, as they both come of age in, you know, with very different life experiences, I think is also just something that makes the show so memorable. Kind of both of their journeys into coming into identity, Will knowing that, you know, the very heavy policing of Black men is something that exists, something that he's grown up with. And Carlton kind of not discovering necessarily, but being very forcefully exposed to that and the danger and trauma of that is just, I think the way that they both come into that, and the representation of that, I think is something that just makes this episode stand out. And again, I think the importance of nuance and not holding necessarily a monolith of what the experience is like to be a Black male, you know, to pick that apart, to pick apart the experience of being a woman of color, a Black woman, a South Asian woman, who've experienced different types of trauma, and to know that those aren't the only stories and that it's important to represent different versions of those, different ways of coming into those, like, understandings of identity, just feels like something that makes these shows stand out to me, and something that has kind of just breaking down the idea of representation rather than, you know, numbers and diversity and like people on a screen, but like the depth of the narratives told and what they, the ways that they resonate with us.
Completely. I think that's such an amazing point. And it is so true that like once we start to see like the slight differences in characters despite their similar experiences, like what you're saying with Carlton and Will, and Carlton is having a different experience of understanding like what happened and why from Will, and like they're kind of like butting heads and clashing on that. I think that's such a good example of what it is to have characters that are of similar backgrounds in some ways, but also have different class differences and like have different coming of age narratives of their own, and like get to explore both of that within a similar narrative. So I think that specific episode of Fresh Prince just shows us why the show has such an amazing lasting impact. Like years down the line, the show is still culturally relevant in its content and really just has a devoted audience because people formed a connection to the show and its characters for all of these reasons that they could see themselves in all the facets of the characters. Like, people were really shaped by this show. And I think it kind of ties it together for us that like solid and real representation in media just brings interesting and impactful stories that really do stay in the culture and like become pinpoints in media. They can just be like reflected on too as like significant or sometimes just objectively good. I personally think that I May Destroy You will be viewed as objectively good down the line for its cultural impact, but maybe that's just me.
No, I definitely agree. And that's one thing that feels maybe bittersweet isn't the right word, but it does feel a little bit kind of, there's both joy and frustration in that because there's so much with shows like I May Destroy You feeling seen in some ways in that and being able to resonate with that, to know, like, to hold the importance of that narrative, but then also kind of some frustration at knowing that, you know, Emily in Paris won a Golden Globe nomination over I May Destroy You, and to know that it wasn't recognized at the time, to know that Michaela Coel wrote the show, poured her heart and soul into it, told a narrative that was very personal to her, and, you know, to know that she didn't get that immediate recognition, that the credit where it's due is to, you know, just adds to that frustration. But
Completely. And it just really points to the importance of, like, I think over the past, 5, 6 years, we've talked a lot, like, people have talked a lot about, like, Grammy so white, Oscar so white, and, like, we understand that, like, award shows to an extent, like, don't have this importance, but they also, like, completely do, because the awards that we give and the shows that we choose for these, like, awards, like the Emmys or the Oscars or the Grammys, like what we're talking about, these shows hold significance in that they validate someone in their craft and they validate someone in the moment for saying that what you're doing today and right now is appreciated, is viewed as, like, important by people who have power in your sphere of media. And I think while it's pretty easy sometimes to just be like, oh, these award shows, like, they're not worth your time, like, they're so white and they're so whitewashed, like, they are worth your time in a way because they do validate someone's craft and they validate that, like, certain shows are, like, worth your time. And, like, a lot of people take these shows very seriously as, like, a recommendation almost. So you're completely right in saying that, like, while some of these shows, like I May Destroy You, like, will get their due credit with history and with time, they completely deserve their due credit now. And it's so sad and shameful when they don't get that. And I think hopefully we'll see some redemption with I May Destroy You and the Emmys. It's gotten amazing nominations. Like, I think it's almost nominated in every category. But then again, like, these shows and these award shows are still, like, deeply flawed systems that tend to be extremely white and, like, have panels that are extremely white. So I'm not going to hold my breath, but it does have 9 Emmy nominations. So I would love for Michaela Cole to get her due credit. But yeah, that is such a true point. And it really is just that, like, shows that bring that diversity in front of and behind the camera that are being created now, those are the ones that will have the, like, the Fresh Prince effect and not, like, the Friends effect, like, showing true depictions of life rather than just, like, showing, like, white fantasy versions of life like we see in Emily in Paris. And I think it's important that we really do just kind of demand more, not only from the systems of media, but just from representation. Like you were saying with Never Have I Ever and not wanting to create, like, a show that becomes a monolith. Like, we need to push shows that are already great to be better because the outcome is always just stronger and truer stories.
And I think in coming of age narratives, especially in a narrative that is quite literally, you know, follows people finding themselves, navigating the world that they're in and the way that they experience their identities, I think getting to see just the way that that representation is broken down to, again, not like faces on a screen or diversity in numbers, but to see such nuance and in like such profound narratives feels so important to me because all of these touch someone so personally. And yeah, I'm excited for the way that these shows have, you know, paved the way for so much more representation. I'm so grateful for all the hard work behind, you know, that you know, Michaela Coel and Mindy Kaling and so many women of color, so many people of color have put into creating these shows and these representations. And I'm, yeah, truly excited for what is gonna come next.
Me too. Well said. Yeah. So I think that's everything that we had for coming of age and identity representation. I mean, this is the topic that we've talked about for hours at this point. I mean, we just both find it fascinating.
Yeah, thank you for such a good conversation, Eva.
Yeah, thank you, Somia. Okay, bye, y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Justice in Motion. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe wherever you found us so you don't miss our future episodes. And until we see you next time, watch films, be fair to each other, and we'll see you then. This episode was written by Eva Briner and Somia Kannan and is a production of the Social Justice Film Institute.